Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Lucid Libertarian with Lori Yan Show. Please be sure to tune in Sunday nights from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, to discuss current events, news, and political opinion with Lucid Libertarian flair. Be prepared, folks. We often go into an optional extended third hour. This show advocates for liberty, freedom, our Constitution, Bill of Rights, and limited government, while speaking against corporate and government corruption, tyranny, and the globalist Great Reset agenda that undermines our precious American sovereignty. Discussions here are unscripted and free-flowing, so sometimes conversations wander off in unpredictable directions. Would you like to call in and share your thoughts and be part of the conversation? The number is 563-999-3698. Again, that is 563-999-3698. Then press number 1 and you'll be added to the queue. Please also like and follow my Lucid Libertarian with Lori Yan page on Facebook. You can help me battle their freedom-loathing censorship by visiting my page regularly, along with reacting, commenting, and sharing my posts. Thank you so much for listening, but please sit tight and don't go anywhere. We'll be back in a few minutes to kick off the show.
Join me, Dahl Arntzen, your host, Fridays, the Alaskan Patriot Network. I will bring you conservative views and news, both at home here in Alaska and around the world. So be sure to tune in Fridays, 2 to 5 p.m. Alaska Daylight Time, the Alaskan Patriot Network.
Hey there. Are you hesitant to get the vaccine?
Yeah.
Then get the brand new government-approved Vaccinate Me Elmo doll.
Wow! Elmo loves experimental vaccines!
With the Vaccinate Me Elmo doll, your kid will finally feel the pressure and shame we've successfully made you feel to get the COVID vaccine.
Quick! Give me the vaccine! Elmo don't want to be responsible for the deaths of friends or family! Thanks! Now Elmo's a good person!
The Vaccinate Me Elmo doll comes with a toy syringe, a stethoscope.
Elmo, your heart is beating fast. Are you having complications?
Of course not!
And a tiny vial of something. It's not the vaccine, promise. It's, water. Let your kid drink it.
Elmo, can't you take your mask off now?
No! Gotta keep that mask on forever!
That feels like mixed messaging.
With the Vaccinate Me Elmo doll, your child will be begging you to get the vaccine, just scared out of their little mind for the fate of the world, or your money back.
It's your turn! Time to get the vaccine!
You want to.
Sorry, you have to!
No!
Do it!
No!
You have no choice!
No!
Now! Now! Or else!
Or else what?
Last chance.
And for all you anti-science conspiracy believing parents, buy the re-released classic Tickle Me Elmo. It's perfectly normal.
Now this is fun.
Get the vaccine, guy.
Buy the Vaccinate Me Elmo doll today. It's required by the CDC.
The Babylon Bee Guide to Wokeness will teach you everything you need to know about how to choose your pronouns,
how to blame everyone else for your problems,
how to show the world just how wonderful you are,
the art of virtue signaling,
the basis of race, gender, and intersectionality,
the truth about American history,
problematic books,
and how to tell if a baby is racist.
Imagine waking up in a trunk. What is grooming? What if I told you we had a 40% increase of human and sex trafficking in our country due to COVID lockdowns? We already had high numbers to begin with. One's Purpose is an amazing organization pounding the pavement every day, helping these survivors get help. Unfortunately, they do not have the funding they need for a safe house. In the state of Oregon, we have zero safe houses for these survivors who have endured the most heinous of crimes. The time is now to get involved. The time is now to help stop human trafficking. Please go to onespurpose.com to get involved. If you need help and if you know someone who needs to get help, please contact 541-221-3448. Make a donation. Make a difference.
All right. Hello, everybody. You are tuned in to the Lucid Libertarian with Lorianne show. Thanks for sticking around while I played some ads and then played the Vaccinate Me Elmo doll that I haven't played for a while, which is a favorite of mine and Doll's. Speaking of which, I will be bringing on Doll Arnson. She is the host of Freedomizer Radio Show, Alaskan Patriot Network on PM Pacific Time, and I often join her as her co-host. And so she and I are definitely a team, and she is going to be on tonight with me, and I'll bring her on shortly. And we do have a great show lined up today, you guys. I am super excited for having Dave Champion, a.k.a. Dr. Reality, on my show today as a special guest. I have been kindly nudging him for quite a while to come onto my show. And finally, he's going to be on the show tonight. And actually, I see him raising his hand right now. For those of you that don't know, follow his channel on Rumble, Dr. Reality. He has done all kinds of different great informative videos, everything from COVID to taxes to gun rights to all kinds of stuff. He is a physiologist with a doctoral degree in political philosophy. He has an extensive background in legal studies. He has served as a legal consultant on state and federal regulatory matters, as well as a constitutional law advisor. He's lectured on numerous topics, including our U.S. Constitution, the history and proper limited application of the income tax, government relations, and human physiology. He's a former martial arts instructor and a renowned firearms tactics and use of force instructor. So this guy is an amazing guy. And he's also a walking, talking body of artwork on his body. He has the coolest tattoos. In any case, he's just going to be a great time. I know we're going to have an informative discussion. He's so well-read and well-versed. And so with that, I'm going to first bring on Doll and say hi to her.
Well,
hello, Doll.
You,
how are you? Thank you so much for joining me tonight.
To be here. It's really good to be here. I'm excited about tonight's guest. I'm also a fan of Dr. Realities and all of his great work. It's with great sadness he was deplatformed from BoobTube. So YouTube, folks, not BoobTube. You won't find, there's no BoobTube.
Well,
there's probably BoobTube.
May as well call it that.
I'm sure there's BoobTube out there. What the heck?
I'm sure that'll be a topic of discussion.
Oh my god.
That was pretty recent.
So it's just huge, you know, and I follow him on social media. I encourage everybody out there, you know, he's on Twitter, he's everywhere. But yeah, so it's sad though, because there's so much content on there that you and I have shared, you know, over our time together of his and information and gleaned so much information from that. So but we're not listening to me tonight. We're listening to Dr. Reality. I'm going to go ahead and hand the baton over.
Oh, right on. Okay. So good. But of course, as usual, you know, definitely speak up and I look forward to your input.
Oh, yeah.
And I am going to, and then for those of you listening out there, most of you guys out there that are regular listeners know that when I have a guest on, I try to give them the floor as much as possible and dedicate the first half of the show to them. So if you want to call in, I encourage you to do so during the second half of the show. The number to call in is 319-527-6208, 319-527-6208, and then press number 1, and that raises your hand to let me know that you want to join us. But again, please do so during the second half of the show, because I will be listening intently to what Dr. Reality Dave Champion has to say. And so with that, I am bringing him on right now. And hello to you. Happy Sunday.
Hey, Lorianne. I'm glad we finally were able to do this.
I knew it would happen eventually. I just knew it. And
by the way,
I'm fully believing that you would be worth the wait.
About me. I listened to all those kind things that you had to say about me, and I'm like, did I really do all those things?
Yes.
Yes. You have. And you're worthy of it. And like I said, I think you're definitely worth waiting for. I know it's been a while because you just had like a really big move that occupied your life for a while. And so lots of just life going on. And so I kind of held back on bugging you to come onto the show for a while until things settled down. And so I really appreciate that you reached out to me and said, hey, I didn't forget about you. And so I was pretty floored when I saw that. And I was like, oh, you know, and you're like, do you still want me to come onto your show? And I was like, absolutely I do.
I was just waiting to the point where we weren't living out of boxes anymore.
You know, I still have boxes. I moved into my house like over 6 years ago, and I still have piles of boxes that I've never unpacked. So, I think they'll be there like forever.
I completely understand. Believe me.
It's like I'll depart from this earth, and then like my family or friends will be coming, and they'll be finding like all of these boxes of stuff that are like 30 years old. Selling them as antiques, especially boxes of computer parts and cables.
Oh, yes, I have crates of those.
Oh, my goodness.
If I ever wanted to go back to, like, the the Windows 95 or Windows 98 days, I probably have all the parts to be able to build such a thing. So anyway, so thank you for so much for coming on. And so as Dahl mentioned, and I know this is a topic that I'm sure a lot of people have been asking you, is tell us the story about being deplatformed from YouTube after how many years?
I've been on YouTube 11 years, and up until SARS-CoV-2, I never had a problem with YouTube. In fact, for the first year and a half, I didn't have a problem with YouTube. And, you know, when YouTube decides to deplatform you, you have to sort of guess at why that is. Now, in my case, they had taken down three of my videos within 90 days. That was my in quotes, transgression. And each of them was taken down under the allegation of medical misinformation concerning SARS-CoV-2, COVID-19, or the vaccines. However, YouTube does this thing where, let's say I did a 25-minute presentation and I touched on 9 different facets of whatever the theme was of that presentation. And I would expand to some extent on the facts, the data, and the evidence concerning those 9 facets that I was addressing. YouTube never says, hey, listen, at 17 minutes and 5 seconds, you got into this subject, and we consider what you said about that facet of the presentation, we consider that to be medical misinformation. They never tell you that. So one is left to guess about what the allegation is about. And therefore, and this is the really interesting part, I think, because one is left to guess, there is zero way to effectively appeal. So basically the way it works is because YouTube won't tell you what it believes constitutes medical misinformation, there is no effective way to appeal. So all YouTube has to do, whether it's medical misinformation or any of the other violations of their community guidelines, all they have to do is say you've done that 3 times within a 90-day period, and they can take down your channel. So I find the whole process questionable to begin with. And I don't believe, you know, and obviously you can imagine whenever they take one down and claim medical misinformation, I go back through that presentation in my archive. I go back through that with a fine-tooth comb. I've never found anything that was not factual. So I don't believe it had anything to do with the stated cause. I believe the motivation was I repeatedly talked about the fact that the vaccines do not activate production of memory T cells. If your audience isn't familiar with the ramifications of that, we've all heard of herd immunity. And I was just running some numbers today to do a presentation tomorrow. And if we use the CDC's metrics of how they come up with an estimate of total infections based on identified infections, we are currently at 398 million Americans having been infected with SARS-CoV-2. That's 64 million people more than the entire U.S. population. So you will remember, just before the vaccines rolled out, there was a huge discussion about herd immunity. And you may remember the theme was, we can't reach herd immunity without the vaccines. Do you remember that?
Oh, absolutely, which was laughable.
Okay. So here we are.
Definitely remember that.
And there was a lot of talk about whether it would, you know, the percentage of people infected would need to be 70%, 80%, 90% to achieve comprehensive herd immunity. So here we are at 119% right now, according to CDC's metrics. That's not my number. And we've got 275 million Americans vaccinated as of a few days ago. Okay. So if you add the two together, and of course there's some overlap there, but if you add the two together, I mean, we're well over 400,000 people either having been infected or having been vaccinated. And yet, and there's only 334 million Americans in this country. So we are dramatically beyond anything that anybody was talking about in terms of achieving herd immunity. And you've probably seen the headlines that because Europe is experiencing a rise in Omicron B2, that the quote experts are predicting that's going to happen in the U.S. and we're going to see a surge in new daily infections here. Well,
yeah,
I'm just
like lather, rinse, repeat over and over again
yes.
with this COVID narrative.
So I'm just going to, because we don't know what the exact overlap is between people who've been infected and people who've been vaccinated, I'm just going to use the number 430 million people as a total number between infections and vaccination. Okay. So if we just grab that arbitrary number for the sake of this discussion, 430 million people, well over, almost double the number of people we have here in the United States, right? And they've either been vaccinated or they've been infected, and yet we don't have herd immunity. Why is that? It's because the vaccines do not activate production of memory T cells, and memory T cells are the foundational part of the body's immune process that's on a society-wide basis creates what we call herd immunity. So we'll just use the number of 100, say a community numbers 100 people. So when one person has memory T cells, what that means, so if they ever encounter that pathogen again, their body knows exactly how to do it, what they did the first time, and can do it rapidly and keep the person from having any disease or maybe even noticing that they've come in contact with the pathogen again. Okay, so that's what memory T cells do. When you have one person, you don't have herd immunity in a pool of 100. When you have 20, you probably don't have herd immunity. When you have 50, you may not have herd immunity. But as you start getting into the realm of, you know, 68 people, 75 people, 90 people, you absolutely, depending on the pathogen, you're going to have herd immunity, which means that pathogen ceases to be a public health threat because it just has nowhere to go. There's not enough people left in the susceptible pool that it matters anymore. Okay. That's what herd immunity is. And again, it's achieved when you get somewhere in the realm, depending on the pathogen, 68%, 70%, 80%, so forth. But we are well past 100%, and we still don't have herd immunity. We're still talking about actively having more and more and more infections. So when I started talking about the fact that the vaccines do not activate production of memory T cells, that is a huge threat to the entire mRNA vaccine market moving forward, because if it becomes public knowledge that the reason we don't have herd immunity, by the way, every single pathogen that has caused a significant outbreak, pandemic type thing, every single one has ended in the history of mankind, every single one, by herd immunity. Okay? Doesn't mean we'll never see that bacteria or that virus ever again, but that particular outbreak or pandemic ended because of herd immunity in a particular community at a particular place on the globe. Yeah. So if the public learns that the reason this isn't ending is because the mRNA vaccines prevent the world, in this case, from ever achieving herd immunity, that's a huge problem for mRNA technology moving forward, because it is essentially taking away society's way of ending outbreaks. In all of mankind's history,
our natural way.
Correct. They've all ended through natural, comprehensive herd immunity. And if the mRNA technology, these vaccines, are preventing that, we are allowing these pathogens to run wild in our communities for years, perhaps decades. And that's not just me saying that. Probably one of the people who's most respected out there in social media concerning SARS-CoV-2, COVID-19, the vaccines is a British gentleman by the name of Dr. John Campbell. He went from not being particularly well-known to, I think he's got more than 2 million people following him on YouTube now. And he just said, yesterday or the day before, he just said that it appears SARS-CoV-2 is going to be with us for years or decades. So there is no way for that to be true and to have herd immunity. And we're not talking about herd immunity in some way failing naturally, because it doesn't do that. We're talking about some form of technology inhibiting herd immunity from doing in society what it has always done throughout the entire history of mankind. The only thing that's different about this particular outbreak from previous outbreaks is mRNA technology vaccines. So it appears to me that the reason YouTube decided that it needed to pull down 3 of my videos and make a medical misinformation claim, by the way, none of the ones they pulled down had anything to do with what we're discussing now with the lack of herd immunity from the mRNA vaccines. they didn't go directly to that. Okay. So I think it was all a smokescreen. Let's see. We can't have champions saying that. We've been contacted and told that this is a message that cannot be permitted, and so we need to get rid of him. So let's just grab 3 of his videos, claim they're medical misinformation. We don't have to tell him anything about what it is. What we allege is medical misinformation. We don't do that. We don't tell people. So there's no way he can effectively appeal this. And we'll get him off the channel, and then we'll please whoever it is who contacted Google or YouTube and said this guy needs to go.
Yeah, and I think that is a standard operating procedure now on social media as well. You know, Facebook does the same thing. I mean, I don't know what it is, but, like, I'll get a notification on my Lucid Libertarian page that, you know, one of my posts is being lowered or, you know, was removed or whatever because it was misinformation or misleading. And so I'll go to the notification, and it doesn't say anything about what the post is. Like, what post is it? I don't know. It just brings me to my page quality. And then the most recent link is like a couple months old. And so I have like no idea. And so I'm like in this perpetual, endless 90-day lowering of my posts and feed and stuff restriction for I don't know what. You know, look, I'm just supposed to guess, you know. I'm just supposed to scroll my page forever and ever to see if maybe I could find whatever post it was that triggered the notification.
Yeah,
and so it sounds like YouTube is doing the kind of the same operating procedure where you say something that goes against the billions and billions of dollars that are invested in these big pharma companies that are making these clot shots. And, oh my gosh, now we have to deplatform you. Now we have to lower you.
And by the way, I believe after the world has moved on from SARS-CoV-2, not saying that the virus will be gone, but after the world just doesn't want to hear about it anymore because, you know, people can only play this game so long, right? So I think there'll come a point where all but the most intransigent COVIDiots will have moved on and say, you know, I'm done with this. I'm not – all these mitigation measures, all this government stuff, I'm done. So I imagine probably a year or two after we reach that point, we will begin to see research coming out. The questions, I heard immunity was never reached. And eventually somebody, at least if they're willing to have their career ruined, you know, I don't work for big pharma. I'm not a professional physiological researcher, so I can't be cut off from my grant funding or anything like that. But if they want their careers ruined, they can actually find the answer to why didn't the world ever hit herd immunity, and the answer is because the vaccines do not activate production of memory T cells, and the two associated questions. These are questions. Now, I'm sitting here telling you and your audience, not suggesting, telling them that the vaccines do not activate production of memory T cell, period, hands down. Now, two things that I'm not telling anyone, I'm asking questions because the research hasn't been done and we don't have the data to know either way. When somebody has a natural infection from SARS-CoV-2 and then gets vaccinated, does that process somehow degrade, deactivate, or otherwise confuse the memory T cells that came from the initial infection? The second question is, when somebody gets vaccinated first and then becomes infected by the natural virus, does the fact that they were vaccinated prevent the process of the natural infection activating production of memory T cells? Unfortunately, there's so much, this is ironic, actual medical misinformation being put out by people like CDC and National Institutes of Health and a number of other sources. They are really the purveyors of medical misinformation concerning SARS-CoV-2 and the COVID-19 and the vaccines. Because we're getting so much bad information and massaged data and omission of critical data, we really don't know the answer to that question. As an example, CDC's number starting in January, so the research was done before January, but the conclusion of the data in January that CDC had gathered was that natural immunity from SARS-CoV-2 is significantly better than anything that a vaccine provides. Now, we're still talking about antibodies, and whether it's natural infection or vaccine, antibodies wane. That's just natural part. But nevertheless, that the protection from natural infection was much stronger than the protection from the vaccines. Now, that research was done leading up to January, and the data reflected that conclusion in January. Here we are in March. Where the fuck is Walensky? Where the fuck is Fauci? When the data begins to degrade all the lies that we've been told, and this is data that's known by researchers worldwide now. CDC gathered it, but it's now out there. Now we can't get Walensky in front of a camera. Now we can't get Fauci in front of a camera, because they're going to be asked about this data.
Oh, yeah, but Fauci just surfaced to let us know that we can't give up our masks yet. Yeah, he did, what, like 3 days ago or something?
He granted somebody an interview, right. But I love that they brought up, that they asked him about retirement. It's about fucking time.
Yeah, he's done a job well done and misleading, the entire United States and world pretty much, So job well done. We're going to give you a nice big bonus and you should retire. Unless, of course, they need to bring all this back again, which is what he was hinting to, that this new variant is going to come here and, we might have to reinstitute some of these COVID policies and stuff again. And it's just like, it's the same broken record over and over again. And you know what's behind it. It's the money behind it. It's and also the power and control. I think that this whole COVID lockdown and the mask wearing, even Fauci's emails indicate that, he did a complete 180 on wearing face masks, because the real goal was, as part of this experiment, how far can we really take it? How compliant are people going to be? It's a huge, monstrous societal experiment worldwide that has gone on, and people just don't want to accept that as a possible truth.
And it surprises me that anybody in the age of, for instance, YouTube, Rumble, would believe Fauci is credible, because when AIDS first came out, and you remember there was some questions as to whether Congress had sufficiently funded AIDS research. And when Fauci wanted to get more money out of Congress so that his particular division of National Institutes of Health could do the research, which ended up being a disaster, but nevertheless, he wanted considerably more money out of Congress. So he literally gave an interview in which he said that the AIDS virus can be spread through normal household contact between family members, and that children, he literally said this, children interacting normally with their parents can get the AIDS virus. So when I hear people, you know, there are actually, I don't know if you're aware, there are Fauci dolls out there and Fauci paraphernalia that you can buy for gifts. You know, and you're talking about
I'd buy a Fauci voodoo doll. I mean, if voodoo really works, I'd buy a Fauci voodoo doll.
He, whenever he needs to tell a lie in order to achieve whatever objective he has or his supporters in Big Pharma have, he just lies. And it, you can watch that video. It's on YouTube of him telling that lie to get more funding out of Congress. So why anybody today in 2020, 2021, 2022 would say he's credible is just beyond me.
I have to jump in here. Now, when Fauci was saying that AIDS was, you know, contacted this way and that way, I was maybe 13 or 14 years old. So going to school, I mean, we were told that you could get it from the drinking fountain, from you could get it in the cafeteria, and it was on everything. I have to tell you, it really delayed my first kiss. And we had no idea. And I'll tell you, as a parent of five children, I've been steadfast. Lorianne knows. I spend a lot of time at meetings and stuff like that. But I was determined not to let that little prick ruin my kids' high school years. So I've been fighting
good.
The whole way.
You.
And I'm like, I'm old enough to remember that little prick ruining my first kiss, ruining dances, ruining everything. And I don't want to take away, because you have so much we want to hear. We've been waiting to hear from you. But it is so truth. And this is a first-person account of the effect of him. And like I said, and my husband, he's so supportive, you know, of everything, and he feels the same way. But we're a little bit older, and we remember what it was like to grow up under Fauciism, I call it. And I was like, I will not let that little prick from my kid's first dances. You know, he's a freshman in high school, just like I was. What are the parallels? History will not repeat itself. So I just wanted to add that.
Before we move on, I just did want to remark, because SARS-CoV-2 has been such a huge part of our consciousness now for 25 months. Before we move on to something else, I do just want to share with the audience that as we're sitting here talking today, the number of people who've died from or with COVID-19 in the United States is just shy of 0.3%. So everything that has happened in the last 25 months happened, it happened for political reasons, but in theory, we're only supposed to do those things when we have some sort of a disease-causing pathogen that causes some significant percentage of death, and like smallpox, right? Upper respiratory disease-causing virus, such as SARS-CoV-2, it has not yet quite taken 0.3%, and that number is almost certainly considerably overblown, and yet we've gone through what we've all experienced in the last 24 months. And the really, really problematic part of this for me, no one is going to be held accountable.
Yeah, they're all protected. And maybe somebody will at some point, but I think that Fraudy, like what Dahl was saying, it's like this repeat, but it's even worse because of Fraudy. You know, high school graduations were like virtual. And you couldn't have your family there and stuff. And you have all these graduates wearing masks and, you know, this whole thing. It's just been absolutely sickening. And I'm not a parent, you know, but I can only imagine Belle's frustration when, you know, she lived through this under the fraudy, you know, administration way back during AIDS and now with this with COVID. And I know we can talk COVID stuff like forever and like the numbers. I've even mentioned like they keep changing the way everything is counting. And I think that that's on purpose. I think they're deliberate mistakes. That's just my conspiracy brain, but it serves a purpose because you can't really do an honest comparison with numbers and statistics when those numbers and statistics have been consistently changing over and over again with how they're counting the cases, how they're counting the deaths, how they're counting this, changing the definition of that. It's impossible to get any kind of accurate numbers to compare numbers today with a year ago and think that we're going to get an honest and true picture.
Yes, and when you mentioned how they're counting the cases, I want to focus on the fact that you use the word cases. You notice earlier I referred to new daily infections, not new cases. The reason is this. Up until SARS-CoV-2, no outbreak of any viral upper respiratory disease had, in the history of the United States, no one who had that virus was referred to as a case unless they were symptomatic. That was the protocol, and for good reason. People who were asymptomatic were not referred to as cases. When SARS-CoV-2 came along, they threw that protocol, which is completely appropriate and proper and correct, they threw that protocol out the window so that they could refer to anyone who was infected as a case. Early serology tests that were done in places like prisons where you have a population that is controlled, so you have a lot fewer variables. The early serology tests, we're talking back like in April, May, June of 2020, they were showing that 96 to 97% of the infections were asymptomatic. Okay? There was the Boston homeless shelter. I think it was 98 or 99% of the infections in people they found infected were asymptomatic. Okay? So you can imagine with that kind of percentage of asymptomatic, what the picture mm-hmm. looks like if you refer to all of them as cases.
Yeah, and that's what supported the fear-mongering. Oh, my God, all these cases. People are just, like, dying in the street, you know? And pumping that up, because if you count every single positive test, which I know that you have opinions about the validity of the PCR tests and these COVID tests and their reliability, which I definitely want you to speak to that as well. But when you take all these considerations into account, it's just – it is such a massive deception and manipulation of numbers to justify all of this tyranny that we have seen. And beyond the United States, this is a worldwide thing. And it is just baffling to me. I never thought that I would live to see the day to see something like this unfold worldwide like this.
I'm with you.
So, yeah, so tell us your thoughts about these wonderful PCR tests, but especially with the swabs sticking them straight up your nose, or like China doing the anal test, because apparently the anal test is even more effective at what are your thoughts on that?
So PCR testing isn't as horrible as many people make it out to be. First of all, what it's doing is it is amplifying RNA. And they actually use a system where they mark the RNA with a particular kind of, I'll simplify it, with a particular kind of, we'll call it for the sake of this discussion, a dye, so that only that RNA is detectable because it has been marked by this, again, we'll just call it a dye. So it's not that the PCR testing is unreliable, although any diagnostic tool will occasionally error. Okay, let me be clear about that. In my opinion, the problem has been the threshold setting, the average threshold setting going back to when testing started to become really prevalent in about May of 2020. It was 43 cycles of amplification, which is absolutely absurd. A person whose body had successfully dominated the virus, so there was virtually no replication going on, and that person was going to be asymptomatic and going to dispatch that virus rapidly and get on with their life, that person was going to come up positive at 43 amplification cycles. There is no value to that. Even Fauci said that no pandemic has ever been driven by the asymptomatic. Okay? So what the amplification cycles, in my opinion, and I think people can in good faith disagree to an extent. I mean, 43 is absurd, and anybody who says that's right needs to be locked away someplace. But somewhere in the range of about 25 to 32 amplification cycles would tell you who has a significant viral load and who is then infectious, and then you might want to do the contact tracing, you might want to do the isolation quarantine thing, whatever. But at 43 yeah. amplification cycles, you're just getting debris. It's not useful information. And again, if we go back to some of these early serological surveys that came up with 96, 97, 98% asymptomatic, then we take a look at all these PCR test results. And if you say, again, we'll just throw a dart at the board and say 95% were asymptomatic, that means 95% were not properly cases at all.
Exactly.
So that's my view of PCR testing. And you know, a lot of people say that Mullis, the creator of the PCR test, that he said it wasn't intended for diagnostics or isolating viruses. That's a misnomer. That's not what he said. What he said was that when he originally conceptualized the idea of this thing we now call PCR testing and amplifying a very small RNA sample until the point where it can be detected by diagnostic equipment, he said he didn't have that in mind when he conceptualized it. He didn't say it should not be used for that or it could not be used for that. He didn't say any of that, although that's been very popular on social media to make that claim.
Yeah, but I think mostly what the focus is knowing with the PCR test and the cycles, how many cycles, from my understanding, dominantly when you get a PCR test done, it is done like at least 45 cycles, sometimes higher. And the data on that shows is one, I believe the number is once you do more than something like 38 cycles, getting up to 40 cycles, the more false positives you're going to get. And when you get up to 45 cycles or so or 50, then you're almost always going to get a positive. It's going to find some remnant, you know, and produce a positive result. And I think that's the key point that people need to focus on is how many cycles are being done and are they purposely doing it in a number of cycles that will almost guarantee a positive result. And so it's a highly manipulative test to perform and an easy to manipulate result as a result of that. Does that make sense? Or am I like crazy here?
No, well, there's, I don't know about crazy is perhaps, you know, it's a complex subject. So, for instance, if there is no SARS, all living things, and I guess I shouldn't refer to a virus as living because there's that debate on whether viruses actually are alive. But we're going to say, for the sake of this discussion, we'll say all living things have unique RNA. There are no two living things that have identical RNA. So a PCR test will never find a positive if there's absolutely no SARS-CoV-2 RNA in the blood sample. However, if there is any fragments, because that's one of the things that happens when the body's immune system defeats a pathogen, then the macrophage feature of the body comes in and it begins to break down the no longer viable viruses into small parts and absorb those and clear those out of the body. Well, if the macrophage function hasn't done that yet, or in somebody's body is slow to achieve that, then you have these RNA fragments of a virus that's long since gone. Person's immune system defeated it and it's gone, but yet these fragments, you're right. This is where we get into the thing if you've got, you know, 40 cycles, 42, 43, 44 cycles, it's going to pick up these remnant fragments that are meaningless, and then the person is going to test positive.
Very well said. And yeah, it's kind of like, okay, let's go looking for a tree in the backyard. And you don't see the tree in the backyard. So you keep looking and you keep looking. You keep digging and you keep digging through the grass and through the weeds and whatever. And then you find a twig. You know, so, oh, boy, I found a twig. So that means there's a tree here just because I found a twig in the yard. Right? Like that's kind of my take on it. It's like it's just finding this one little twig and then it's being interpreted as, oh, you're positive. You have COVID. You must quarantine. You're a danger to everybody. You're going to kill your grandma. Found a twig in your yard, even though you don't have a tree around.
The very similar analogy I give is that an acorn is not an oak tree.
Yes.
You may find
a fragment of an acorn.
That does not mean you have an oak tree.
Exactly. I love it. And, yeah, I just think that this has been so overblown. I just, and the thing is I think they want us to be so sick of this COVID stuff to get to that point because they want to do mRNA on all kinds of stuff. They want to push this in other areas, even fighting cancer. There's no accident why in the State of the Union speech, Mr. Brandon declared that he wants to beat cancer. Well, guess what? You know, not too long ago I read that they want to develop an mRNA vaccine that will help prevent or fight cancer. And I'm like, oh, well, isn't that coincidental? You know, like, yeah, let's invest in that. You know, we'll make some more billions. It's almost like whenever I smell money in the game, it makes me automatically very critical of the motivation.
Well, Fauci said in a conference a few years before SARS-CoV-2 appeared, he was on stage with six or eight other national health experts, and he said during that interview, and that, again, is out there someplace on YouTube or some other platform, he said during that, when he was asked a question, well, part of his response was, if we end up with something like a pandemic or an epidemic, and we can employ an mRNA vaccine across the spectrum to the public, we can push this technology forward by 10 years. So they've been waiting and planning to try and take this mRNA technology. They consider the real world, like what we've experienced in the last 2 years, to be the laboratory that will push what otherwise would take them 10 years in a laboratory. They can accomplish it simply by having hundreds of millions or billions of people allow themselves to become undeclared clinical trial subjects for the mRNA technology.
Yeah, mandated clinical trial subjects without telling them that they're clinical trial subjects.
Exactly.
And obviously, you can
imagine
my thoughts about not being forthright with the public that they are part of a informal clinical trial to determine what exactly mRNA vaccines do and don't do, and to what extent, and as we discussed earlier on in this conversation, discovering things such as they don't activate production of memory T cells with all the consequences attendant to that failure.
Have you read through some of the documents that have been released from Pfizer that they've been demanded?
I have not.
And I can't remember. I think next month they're supposed to come out with like another 10,000 pages or something.
Yes. I have not. I mean, the first release was 30,000 pages, I believe. And of course, somebody, and somebody will, but somebody has to read through every single one of those 30,000 pages in order to then show the public things that at least they believe are of interest. And then people like me need to come in behind that, take a look at those things that are proffered as perhaps of value or interest, and then have to decide whether there is a real message there that needs to get spread to the public. But the very fact, leaving aside the specifics for a moment, the very fact that the FDA tried to say that those documents needed to be shielded from the public for 55 years, I am absolutely confident that when some of the key points start being brought out and PDF copies of the various pages that contain that information do start percolating out to people like me, we're going to see exactly why they felt it needed to be a secret for the next 55 years.
Yeah, we don't know the reason why yet, but the truth will eventually come out.
Correct.
And now they're being ordered to release so many at a time. And like that first batch was studies that they did, I believe it was up until the end of February of 2021. And so the statistics that like, they're trying to, like, anybody that tries to, those numbers of, like, how many deaths were associated with it, how many, you know, how many side effects, like, you know, pages of these side effects and how many had it, and they're like, oh, well, that's such a small number. It's pretty insignificant. And it's like, well, you have to understand at the time, though, it's only through February of 2021. And the mRNA vaccines were only being rolled out then to healthcare providers and the elderly and people with, you know, low immune systems. So it was a very small percentage overall of the people overall that had taken the shot yet. And so that would explain why the numbers are low with reactions and stuff with people that are in younger age groups, because they're just literally wasn't very many people in those younger age groups getting it. Like I said, only healthcare workers and stuff. And so they're trying to dismiss those numbers in a second. Even with that small of a fraction of people that had taken it, to even have the numbers that they did with some of these very severe reactions, including death, is pretty frightening. You know, for people in younger age group. Yeah, it's very frightening if you think of it in that term. And but nobody wants to think of it that way. And it's like, and now, you know, well, what are the real numbers now with these side effects? How many people have died? And why is any discussion of this so taboo?
Exactly. You know, and one of the things that another of the ploys that's being used to mislead the public is this constant discussion about antibodies and that the vaccines create antibody protection and natural infection creates antibody protection. So I mentioned earlier that antibodies, humoral antibodies, part of the body's not the innate, but the subsequent, if the pathogen gets past your innate immune system, then we get into the antibody production. And probably 99.9% of whatever people read, if they bother, to read about the, quote, protection offered by the vaccine is antibodies. Well, antibodies, in their very nature, no matter how they're acquired, whether it be through vaccine or through a natural infection, they wane always. I mean, this is a fundamental aspect of the immune process. Antibodies wane. They are detectable through standard antibody tests, whether you're looking for like IMM or IMG type. They're detectable through standard tests that your doctor can order for about 8 months, maybe a little more, maybe a little less. After that, they have reduced to the point where you need a much more sensitive, much more expensive kind of test to detect them. And this has always been the case, right? So this is nothing new or specific to SARS-CoV-2. We have always known. As far back as polio, in the 1950s, before the Salk vaccine for polio, in the summer in New York, health officials used to run around giving people injections of antibodies against polio. And everybody knew and everybody acknowledged, whether it was the person getting the injection or whether it was the health officials giving the injection, that those antibodies were only good for about 5 or 6 months, but that would get you through, because they used to have the polio season in New York. It would get you through the polio season. Everybody knew that the antibodies waned. And then next year, you'd get another injection. So this has been known well before the 1950s, but here we had it. We had the antibodies actually being injected into people in the 1950s, and everybody knew that it was about 5 months was all the protection you got. But yet we're talking about these antibodies like now with SARS-CoV-2 as if that's the answer. They're magic. And it's absolute absurdity to focus on antibodies. But the alternative to focusing on antibodies is, to go back to something we discussed earlier, is the discussion about memory T cells, which is what gives you – we've heard a lot about the durable protection. Durable protection for antibodies is usually 10 months, okay? Durable protection when you have memory T cells is – there's some question mark depending on the pathogen, but generally measured in decades and often for the entire balance of your life, no matter how long you live. That's durable protection. But there's absolutely no discussion about that kind of protection. The entire conversation is about antibodies, and that is a con. That's to keep people feeling like they're informed and they know what's going on, and they can spout what they see on CNN or Fox News about antibodies and make them feel knowledgeable and comfortable by discussing something that's essentially meaningless. And by the way, that's why you need another shot and another shot and another shot and another shot, because the shots don't create memory T cells and the antibodies wane. Natural infections, the antibodies wane, but you have memory T cells, so it's okay when they wane. They're designed to wane when you have memory T cells. Did I say that all clearly?
Yes. And
absolutely.
Think about like the Spanish flu. And there was no vaccination for it. And it burnt out after a couple years, ergo, you know, herd immunity. And I like to tell people, I believe, you know, that our great-grandparents passed down something in our genetics that would recognize that and give us some type of if that were ever to spring up again. But there was no Fauci back then. So it was able to burn out. Yeah, millions of people died. That's sad. It's unfortunate. But I believe that genetically our bodies, it's passed down from us. Anybody that's ever had it and then had grandchildren and everything, that our bodies have a memory of that coded into us. And this mRNA jab crap has gotten into the way of that. So...
Would you like me to explain why the vaccines do not activate production of memory T cells?
Or is that maybe getting a little too technical?
Okay.
No, absolutely.
So
absolutely.
What caused me to suggest that is that you talked about generational things. Okay. So The oldest known human fossil is, there's some debate on what is actually legitimate, but the oldest one that's thought to come from a hominin is 2.3 million years old. Okay? The oldest one that's thought to come from what, for the sake of this discussion, we'll call modern man, is about 1.6 million years old. So we know that man has existed for millions of years. And during those millions of years, and I'm just going to limit this conversation for simplicity to a virus, during those millions of years, every time a disease-causing virus was encountered by a human body, what happens is, as part of the immune process, the B cells, which you don't hear a lot about in the media, the B cells actually do this cell-mediated endocytosis, which is a fancy term for it uptakes the virus into the B cell. Okay, it's like in Star Trek when the shuttle docked, you know, on the ship. Same thing. The B cells actually bring the virus inside themselves. And what they do then is they begin to break down the virus. Well, the virus, like everything else, has an anatomy. And depending on who you want to listen to and what they consider significant, there's somewhere between about 16 to 20 different individual anatomical aspects to a virus. So the B cells, what they do is they break down the virus, and as they're breaking down the virus, the B cells categorize, they record the specifics of that particular virus. Now, today we identify them scientifically through their RNA, but the body doesn't know how to do that. So the body catalogs the anatomy. They all have unique anatomy in one way or another. Then what happens is the B cells transmit that, what I have dubbed the pathogen profile. That's my own term for that catalog of anatomical specificity. The B cells then hand that pathogen profile off to something called a CD4 T cell. Okay? Now, CD4 T cells are really intriguing in my mind because they differentiate into different kinds of T cells. One of the T cells into which they differentiate is a memory T cell. Would you like to guess what the signal is that a CD4 T cell receives that says, oh, I'm supposed to differentiate into a memory T cell? If you said that it's receiving the pathogen profile from the B cell, you would be right. That is the trigger that causes that particular CD4 T cell to differentiate into a memory T cell, because absent that, there's no reason to create a memory T cell, right? Because without the pathogen profile, what's in memory? Nothing. So it is the CD4 cell receiving the pathogen profile that triggers it to become a memory T cell. Now, I said the B cells categorize the entire anatomy of the virus and have for mankind's entire existence on the face of the earth. Until December of 2020, well, actually May of 2020 with the clinical trials, when for the very first time the human immune system wasn't coming in contact with the whole anatomy of a virus, it was coming in contact with a small portion of the virus's anatomy called a spike protein. Well, the B cells have zero capability of creating a pathogen profile when they get a small fragment of the overall virus. They get just this thing called the S-spike protein. There is no way for the B cell to create the pathogen profile. Therefore, it can't hand it off to the CD4 T cells. Therefore, they never differentiate into memory T cells because they have nothing to carry with them in that differentiation process. So that is why we're eventually going to see researchers, whether it's 2 years, 3 years, 4 years down the road, start to talk about the fact that that's why we never achieved herd immunity. But anybody who comes out and says, anybody who's in the research field, who receives grants, who works for people like Big Pharma, et cetera, who comes out and says the vaccines do not activate production of memory T cell, that person is finished in the research industry. They will never work again.
Exactly, because that will restrict the profit. You know, that goes against their money-making apparatus, right? It makes too much sense.
Yes. If the public understood what we just talked about, I would like to think, although I have less and less faith in my fellow man every year, it seems, but I would like to think the public would say, we're not going to do this mRNA vaccine because we know from that research that it's not solving our problem. It's creating antibodies, which indeed do in a short term protect us from disease. Absolutely no question about that. But in the macro picture of what our bodies are supposed to be doing, it's not doing what our bodies do for themselves. It's a pale ghost of
forever.
Correct. It's a pale ghost of what our own immune system does left on its own.
You know, and you bring up an interesting point. I love talking like historically and like biologically over time. And what you're talking about, too, can go beyond the virus aspect. But, you know, these mRNA vaccines, I think, are doing more of a disservice because of the fact that it's just giving our body a tiny little portion of this virus instead of the whole picture. And your body can't identify it that way. Just like how, you know, you can see me walking on the street and you'll identify me by the whole package, not just by the color of my hair. And that's kind of what these mRNA vaccines to me are doing, is it's just going, okay, I'm going to give you just the color of their hair, and the body's supposed to somehow remember that's significant enough to remember it. But no, you need the whole package. And then when it comes to variants, it's like, well, once you've been exposed to the whole package, you have my height, my size, my body structure, my eye color, my facial features, you got everything there is to know about me. And then let's say a variant comes along, and that variant just has a different hair color or a different eye color or maybe is an inch shorter, but overall can still be identified. You know what I mean? It's just because there's that one thing that's different. And so it can still be recognized even though you change, you know, one or two small properties of it. The whole scenario is still identifiable. You can still identify that person. And so what, you know, these, and then when we go back historically, going beyond this virus, is just about everything. Like, let's look at our gut flora. You know, our gut flora is as identifiable as a fingerprint. We all have different gut flora. But at some point in our human evolution, each and every one of those bacteria probably got us sick. But over time, because of how our immune system works, and then those variants become eventually like symbiotic. And so suddenly something that at one point in our human history would make us sick now is in turn helping us because it's formed a symbiotic relationship. And so I think that one of the things that if we do this overuse of mRNA vaccines for everything under the sun, we are just going to be robbing our own human evolution that way because we will no longer be able to form these symbiotic relationships with the pathogens that we encounter. Does that make sense at all? Or am I crazy?
It certainly is a possibility if mRNA technology becomes pervasive and over the long term. I don't know what the future is for mRNA technology in medicine, and I do not dismiss mRNA technology as being a viable tool for a given set of circumstances down the road. I don't think the fact that the mRNA vaccines are, in my mind, a complete and utter failure. I don't think that that should dictate we throw away the baby with the bathwater and never look at mRNA technology again. I think we have to be the public, because big pharma and people like Fauci, you know, they're just going for the money. So we, the people, have to be far more educated and far more selective about what we're willing to engage in when it comes to new technologies. I think the fact that we're injecting everybody worldwide with something that does not activate production of memory T cells, and that's being kept a secret, I think that right there tells us that mRNA technology is not showtime ready. I wouldn't put it in my body at this point, but we are the test subjects. We are the guinea pigs for an emerging technology. What it will eventually be useful for, if anything, I don't know.
Part of the experiment, though, too, and which is why I refrain from it. You know, I am very skeptical. It's like, oh, it sounds so great. Well, you know, it's kind of like when Hollywood really pumps up a shitty movie, play all the ads for it all the time and the previews for it all the time, and it's all hyped up, and, ooh, it's nominated for all these awards. And then you watch it, and you're like, what? You know?
Exactly.
I just got through this because it was so hyped up. You know, and I'm going to tell you, like, the one that comes to mind, movie-wise, is La La Land. That thing was so hyped up. And I am a fan of a good movie musical. You know, I've grown up, I love movie musicals. Even The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, which most people have not seen. But classic movie musical, Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. I've always loved it. Dolly Parton, Burt Reynolds. And, you know, that was a good musical. So I'm always up for a good musical. And then I watched La La Land after all the hype, after all the nominations and all this stuff. And I somehow endured it. And the only reason why I kept watching it was because I'm like, it has to get better, right? All the hype, it has to get better, right? And it never does.
Right.
And so, like, and that's what I think about these mRNA vaccines. It's like, it has to get better, right? But the more you look, the more it's like, no, it's not. It's falling short of every single promise that we've been led to believe in, what was pumped and all the previews and all the pushing, you know, all the pushing for it. And it is failing on every level. The more information comes out and the more time goes on.
Absolutely.
I was a skeptic from the start.
That's prudent. You've been paying attention.
You know, and I'm a techie girl, and even though I've been a techie girl, I am actually one of the last people that will install the latest, you know, Windows operating system or the latest Office. You know, I am not the one that rushes to install the newest thing. Why? Because I know it has problems. It always does, and it's a bigger headache than everything. And so I wait for like a year before I will upgrade, because I want all the bug fixes to come out first. And I don't care how much it's hyped up. I don't care how many friends tell me how great it is. I'm not going to upgrade until I know all the bugs are wiped out. And that's happened with everything. Like, I didn't go with Windows XP even until Service Pack, because it was just so riddled with problems. And I'm like, why should I, you know, upgrade to XP when there's so many problems? And until Service Pack 2 came out, then, hey, great, now it's really solid. Now it's, you know, all the bugs are worked out. And I've always kind of operated that way. And so with the mRNA vaccines, I was immediately as well like, I'm going to sit back and just wait this one out and see how it turns out. I don't want to deal with the aggravation of if this is a bad thing or not. And the longer I wait, and the more, you know, I started out being open-minded, and now I'm like, absolutely not. I am not taking that shot. I don't care. I will not do it with the information that has come out so far.
Yeah, I'm almost speechless when I consider the public's blind acceptance that this is the way to go.
And because they're pressured. I mean, it'd be one thing if people were really choosing it, if they were really making an informed decision and deciding to get these COVID vaccinations, then I wouldn't have so much of an issue with it. If they were making an informed decision, but they haven't been. People have not been able to make an informed decision on this. And then to be mandatory through coercion. First, they were nice about it. Ooh, we're going to give you $100 if you get the shot. And then it was like, and then companies were like, ooh, we'll give you $500 if you get the shot. So it came, you know, all the bribery. And then when the bribery didn't work on everybody, then they had to go to coercion and force. If you want to work, if you want to go to a concert, if you want to go anywhere, do anything, fly on a plane, whatever, you know, you're going to have to get the shot.
Yeah, Rage Against the Machine says that you have to show proof of vaccination to get into one of their shows. Sorry, no.
It's like, nope, I'll miss it. Yeah.
You know, Rage Against the Machine is supposed to be, you know, their whole core image is supposed to be anti-establishment, but if you don't have proof of vaccination, you can't get into their shows. It's a thing. You got to be kidding me. And then, you know, I'm a big punk rock guy, you probably know. And The Offspring is not, you know, they're questionable, I guess, whether they're the kind of punk I enjoy, I'll phrase it that way. But nevertheless, they're well known and typically thought of throughout, you know, the music community as being punk. And they literally fired their drummer of 14 years because he, when he was younger, he had Guillain-Barré, and his physician said because one of the known side effects of the vaccines can be another episode of Guillain-Barré, that his physician said, which could leave him crippled for life. Okay, in to a greater or lesser extent, depending on how severe, could leave him crippled for the rest of his life. His physician told him, you should not get the vaccine. You're healthy. Your odds of anything bad happening from SARS-CoV-2 is very small. Your odds of something happening bad from the vaccine is considerable. So don't do the vaccine. 14 years, he was the drummer for the band, and they fired him. They literally, when he informed them that it was the opinion of his physician that he should not get vaccinated, they fired him. I will never purchase another shred of their music. I will never see them in concert, ever. As far as a band that I would give even a penny of my money to, they're dead to me. They don't exist.
Yeah, and that's how you got to be about it, too. Anybody that signs on for this kind of stuff, it's just like, you know, I'm looking for jobs and stuff, and, you know, there was a job that looked pretty good as far as, you know, what they were looking for and my being a match, and I'm reading through it, and I'm like, yeah, this looks good, and then I read all the way at the bottom that they are demanding even their remote workers to get COVID vaccinated by June in order to keep their employment. And so I'm like, close that tab. You
know? Well, I would like them to explain why remote workers must be vaccinated. I would really love for them to get in front of somebody like me, face to face, not some press conference where they can control what's said, and have a real-time discussion and have them justify. Why do your remote workers have to get vaccinated? Go ahead and explain this to me. Would love that. And that's the same thing that people like Fauci do. They put out whatever they're going to put out in a press conference, or they'll sit down with one reporter who they already know is going to be friendly to whatever they say. They never allow themselves to be challenged with the data, the evidence, or the facts. Never. And when people constantly control the environment in which they speak or write so that no one can challenge them with the facts, data, or evidence, there's a problem right there, right, especially if they're taxpayer funded. You better just stand up and let whoever is knowledgeable ask you questions. Because if you can, if you control the environment so you don't ever get asked questions you, that are going to embarrass you, then the, we know that it's stinky. We know the jig is up. We know they're pulling a fast one. And people like Fauci and Walensky, they are famous for that. The only time Fauci has ever allowed himself to be challenged is when he had to appear before a Senate committee and Rand Paul jumped in his Cheerios. But that, he
didn't
have a choice.
Love those? Yeah. I love that.
Well, even then, I wish Rand Paul had been more effective, because I did a video about this in which I examined the data coming out of England that Fauci used to defend himself against Rand Paul. And I pointed out that by the time Fauci used the UK research to defend his position, the anticipated come from that, back then we were talking about Delta, the outcome that had been predicted by the UK Health Authority had already, the narrative had already collapsed. It was already false. The numbers had already plummeted. That happened like 2 weeks before Fauci used that information to defend himself against Rand Paul. And Rand Paul didn't, or his aides, didn't do enough research that when Fauci threw that out there, they just let that sit as if it was authoritative, when in fact, that narrative had already collapsed by the time Fauci used that to defend himself. So I wish Rand had done a little better job. I wish, you know, Rand, if you're listening, call me. I'll sit on your right shoulder when you do that in the future.
Ooh,
I'll feed you what you need to know.
I would so listen to a conversation with you and Rand Paul. That would be like epic.
Yes, definitely.
Maybe I should invite both of you on for a show.
There you go.
Get Rand's attention. I love it. Dahl, were you going to say something?
Hey,
okay.
I was kind of curious if we could talk about this last video that you had put up on Rumble. The crude oil is abiotic. Is that, am I saying it right?
Abiotic,
not fossil fuel replenishes. That was it was some of the most, that was the, it made so much sense, and the video was so incredibly informative. And can we talk about that real quick, Lorianne? Do you mind? I don't want to segue completely out, but
you read my mind. That was one of the topics I wanted to bring up tonight. So you read my mind.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we're unscripted. She could tell. So, but I didn't want to run out of time. It's your show. So I want to make sure that I was just curious if you'd like to share some of that information with the listeners, because it was amazing and very thought provoking. And that theory completely overrules everything else I've ever thought of.
Sure. I'd like to start with the fact that in our modern society, where we utilize the Prussian education model for K-12, students are often presented with scenarios that are theories. They are hypotheses. They are concepts. They are not established fact. But yet, they are presented in, especially the government schools, even though they might actually, the word theory might be attached, that part is greatly overlooked, and students end up leaving the classroom and going on with the rest of their lives believing that something is a scientific fact when it is not remotely a scientific fact. An example of that, in the context of what you want to discuss, is the fossil fuel model, the fossil fuel hypothesis. Okay? I think if you lined up 100 people and asked them if they knew for a fact where petroleum originates from, they would tell you, dead compacted flora and fauna and other biomatter such as dinosaurs and stuff being compressed under the earth for 650 million years, if they even knew that much. That's what they would tell you if you ask them to state the fact of where petroleum originates from. It's not remotely a fact. It was never a fact. It was never science. There is no, it was a hypothesis formed initially in 1857. Obviously, science was not, you know, even a sliver of what it is today. And I should tell you that today, as we sit here talking in 2022, there is no more evidence that the fossil fuel model is scientific or factual than there was in 1857.
I mean, we're talking 1857. That's a, you know, and this has been the pervasive truth for so long, and yet you're right. You know, nobody has been given the impression that there's anything to question about it. So I love that, this is something that you're speaking to.
When we throw out numbers, I think sometimes people don't quite grasp it. So let me put it in another way. The fossil fuel hypothesis was first offered before the Civil War.
How advanced we were scientifically at that time.
Yes, correct.
And,
okay, so
you know, yeah, and what ability was there to, you know, really examine anything about it to see if that's the true origination of oil? It was just a thought that maybe made sense that has yet to be proven, and here we are this long later, and now it's not questioned at all.
Yes, and the two gentlemen that originally came up with that hypothesis, they were very clear it was a hypothesis. These were not high-ego guys claiming that it was so. They said, this is one possibility. We think this might be true. And it kind of was left at the we don't know phase. Up until someplace in the early 1890s, when Rockefeller, who, of course, was the owner of Standard Oil, which you are probably aware ended up being broken apart via the United States government for violating antitrust laws. At one point, they controlled more than, Standard Oil, Rockefeller, controlled more than 90% of all petroleum products in the United States. And so he was an intriguing guy. It's so funny for me to see guys that are brilliant, they're savvy, they at least fancy themselves to be ethical and moral, and yet they do some things that are highly ethically questionable. And Rockefeller, what he did was he heard somebody, a scientist was doing a presentation someplace, had nothing to do with the petroleum industry, and happened to mention in passing the fossil fuel hypothesis for petroleum origination. And Rockefeller seized on that because he immediately understood the message of scarcity and what it could do for pricing. Okay? And I think that also had a lot to do with the fact that he moved to take complete control of all things petroleum in the United States. And then he started using his wealth to promote the fossil fuel model as if it was a fact. So now he controlled virtually all petroleum in the United States, and there was this model being presented as if it was factual that created the perception of scarcity. So you better pay me what I ask for now, because next year you may not be able to get your hands on this or not get your hands on it in any quantity that we have available now, because we don't know when it's going to run out because it's finite. Okay. That was the entire pitch. Okay. So obviously, that's an entirely different picture than the abiotic model. So for your audience who may have never encountered the competing model, which is called the abiotic theory of petroleum origination, is that, and again, it's just a hypothesis because we don't know what goes on at the core of the earth, right? But the hypothesis is that whatever is taking place at the core, it spins off something. Initially, it may not be what we refer to as crude, but because the Earth rotates, so there's a centrifugal effect, what happens is this byproduct created by the at the core of the Earth, it then starts migrating outward, and of course, all the different layers of different substances that it has to go through as it migrates out up towards the surface, it would be filtered to some extent, and then when it reaches some sort of a cavity that is close enough to the surface of the Earth, and it pools in that cavity, then we say we found an oil field, right? We found a source of oil, and we can drill down and we can pump it out, right? But in this model, it is constantly being replenished by that process at the Earth's core that is bleeding off something that it produces as it does whatever it is it does, that it is emitting this substance, which then migrates outwards through the centrifugal effect and gets filtered and ends up being what we refer to as crude oil when it reaches a point where we can get at it. Obviously, that's not a scarcity model at all. And so that would be very non-popular with the oil industry. And in fact, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
I have literally had friends that are petroleum engineers no longer speak to me when I have laid out the abiotic theory to them. And I have pointed out the lunacy of the fossil fuel model. There have been estimates, because remember, the fossil fuel model is that the flora and fauna and dead animals and whatnot were covered up and compressed and over a period of roughly 650 million years transformed into petroleum. Now, to be clear, there's not one shred of evidence that when you compress flora and fauna and dead mm-hmm. animals, these biosubstances, and you compress them for 650 years, they become petroleum. There's absolutely not one shred of science that would support that. Okay? It's again, that's part of the theory. So
exactly.
there have been estimates based on, okay, volume of biomatter would it take to transform into a barrel of crude. Okay? Toyed with these numbers, I don't know, a year and a half, 2 years ago. And basically the entire planet Earth would have had to been populated wall to wall with dinosaurs. They would have all had to have died roughly at the same time. and then this non-scientific guesswork that, gosh, if you compress something for 650 million years, it'll transform into petroleum, would have to turn out to be true. Okay. It is Harry Potter has about the same credibility in the real world as the fossil fuel model does. At least, and by the way, I'm not declaring that the abiotic model is factual. It just happens to be the last credible model standing, because the fossil fuel model, the only reason anybody believes it's true is because they haven't looked into it. Once they look into it, they realize it's ridiculous. So the abiotic model is the only model that's left standing that may in time be shown to be correct. We know the fossil fuel model is absolutely not correct. When we take a look at the fact that wells that have supposedly gone dry that were no longer viable are now being pumped again, of course, the oil industry, because it likes the scarcity model, right? It never says that the well that went dry or the field that went dry now actually has crude in it again. What they say is new technology allowed us to get more out.
Yes, exactly.
But as you and I know, when the establishment, which incorporates more than just say we were talking about vaccines, so part of the establishment in that context would be big pharma and government. Part of that context when talking about the origination of petroleum would be the petroleum industry and the government again and so forth. So you can imagine when there's a...
Yeah, the petroleum industry is huge. I mean, that's what our U.S. dollar is pretty much based on, is the petrodollar. So to give the U.S. dollar value, there has to be this concept of scarcity that, you know, there's not enough oil and we have to conserve and, you know, and it's so valuable because we're going to run out someday, and keeping that momentum going, you know, is what gives the U.S. dollar value, plain and simple. So you inject a different model that says, hey, you know, it can be replenished. You know, that would just disrupt the whole domino effect of the U.S. dollar backed by petrol.
Yes, I'd like to think that people are getting a little bit wise to how the establishment operates. So when a trillion-dollar industry is hanging its hat in whole or in part on a false narrative, what they will do is they will use their trillions of dollars and their PR department and their friends in government and whatnot to consistently maintain that the false narrative is true. And then if there is a true narrative that might damage their financial position, they will use those same mechanisms to try and convince the public that the true narrative is false. And sure enough, that's exactly what the establishment has done with the abiotic model. As absurd as the fossil fuel model is, once somebody takes a close look at it, the oil industry and its co-conspirators continue to claim that the fossil fuel model is the accurate model, and that abiotic really isn't credible when it's exactly the opposite once you look at them.
Exactly. The abiotic model for me, when I watched your video and I read a little bit about it, my first thought was, you know, how would I explain this to a child sometimes? Because I used to homeschool my kids, and it's almost like, you know, my visualization of it was like kind of like the Earth's digestive juices, and it has to work their way out. Ergo, somehow it's regenerating itself, you know, all the rain that falls, you know, however it's coming through, but it spins, and we know it's spinning, the centrifuge, and it makes perfect sense that we're, like you said, these fields that were once non-producing that are producing, the use of new technology allowed us to do this, you know, model. It makes a ton of sense, and that's why I wanted to talk about it. It's just really interesting, and I want to make sure our listeners check out that video that you did, Dave, because it's just great, and that's on Rumble.
By the way, I want to comment. I think somebody mentioned that if they search Rumble for Dr. Reality.
Dave Champion.
For whatever reason.
On there.
Yeah, for whatever reason, that's not coming up in a Rumble search. What does come up is Dave Champion, PhD.
Okay,
people have told me
Thank
that when they search Dr. Reality, Dave Champion, they don't get anything coming up. But when they put Dave Champion, PhD, it does come up. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you for that. Is Rumble trying to censor you now, too?
No, I don't think so.
Search algorithm is excluding you.
But I would like to quickly touch upon how I am personally, with the people who wish to stay in contact with my content, how we're tackling tech censorship.
Absolutely, yes.
What brought that to mind was you making the joke that is Rumble censoring me now. Well, you know, I don't know if you're aware, Rumble is going public, and while the CEO says that he's going to retain the voting stock so that he'll be able to maintain the mission of what he calls neutrality, which basically means no censorship, we don't know how long that's going to last or how long he's going to take that position or how long he's going
Good
to
point.
Remain.
Good point. I didn't know that.
Yes. So We don't know. Other platforms may at some point either of their own volition or through pressure, outside pressure, begin to engage in censorship. So, for instance, right now I do my videos have all shifted to Rumble, but in a year, maybe Rumble will begin censorship. We don't know. So the way I'm encouraging people to stay in contact if they would like to get my content is to go to my website, which is drreality.news. That's drreality.news. And there's a window is going to open. It's going to ask you to sign up for the newsletter. Okay, to be clear, I don't do newsletters. That's just the way the software phrases it.
But yeah.
When I put these presentations up, I'm sending out emails. So what happens, you sit down at your computer, you open your email, boom. Oh, Dave just did a video on this, and there'll be a description of what the video is about, and there'll be a link, or maybe I wrote something. For instance, I wrote something on thyroid health a couple months ago. So there's a link. So all you have to do is open your email, click on the link, and boom, you get my latest content. And by doing it that way, big tech can never lose touch. As long as you're on that list, you will always be notified of my new content. If you choose to view it, great. If you don't, that's fine too, but at least we'll stay in touch.
Excellent.
Very good point.
Thank you for
Very
sharing
good point.
That with
I
us.
Hope you have a good, good hosting server too, because, like, for example, wasn't it last year that Amazon shut down a bunch of websites that they disagreed with because they were the host? Pretty sure it was Amazon hosting.
Could have been. I don't recall that. But it doesn't mean it didn't happen. I might have just missed it.
Yeah, I would have to look it up myself. But I'm pretty sure it was Amazon hosting, and they shut down a bunch of websites. And like I said, I'll have to look that back up. So that is possible. So you have to have a good host, too. Because if you're with, yeah. if your website is hosted by the same corporate conglomerates that are in cahoots with censoring everything, then your website is even at risk. So you have to choose your web host wisely, put it that way.
Yes, well, the
or
gentleman
run one
who
yourself.
Supports me on the gentleman who supports me on the tech side of things, he is pretty damn brilliant, and he's very savvy about just the kind of things that you're discussing. I trust him implicitly. He's been a good friend and a good supporter of my content for ages. So I'm betting dollars to donuts that he's always going to be ahead of the curve on these issues.
Oh, good, 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 good. It's always great to have a good techie on your side, right?
Because
I think of these
so
things.
True.
Like I
Especially
said, I'm so critical of technology.
Yeah, and
I'm so critical of technology. And I, like my whole setup, like, I have my main services through Xfinity, but then I have my own router that I connect to the Xfinity router. And then, of course, I change everything. I change the admin password. I change my IP address range. I go through and I assign every single device their own IP address. And I only leave, like, one or two extra, like, just for adding a new device if I get something new and I need a connection, and I maintain it that way. So I get kind of – I'm pretty techy when it comes to my own home network. But it's, like, all of it is because, like, it's really hard for somebody to break into my stuff. And I'm always changing my Wi-Fi passwords and all that. And, so I try to keep my network. And you know what? I haven't gotten a virus in years on my computers or on my phone or nothing. So whatever I'm doing, I got my stuff locked down pretty well. I could run a server.
Very good. Unless somebody has those skills.
Well, it took years in the making. It's something that I've done for 20 years. So, well, has it been 20 years? Yeah, about 20 years. And so it's just some things just stick with you. And I like to tinker around with that stuff. But like I said, I'm very wary, like especially of AI, artificial intelligence and facial recognition and the advent of like the social credit system and digital currency and governments getting involved with regulating that. And it's actually kind of scary. And it's like, no, you know, technology can be a great thing, but it can also be a very damaging thing when it's in the wrong hands. And we see that time and time again. And so I get, what are your feelings on that? Like, about like the AI and about like social credit scores and microchipping and stuff like that?
Well, social credit scores, you can imagine, especially in light of income tax shattering the mist, you can imagine how I feel about that. Because certainly, you know, following the law would almost certainly cause a person to have a lower score. But as far as AI, I think AI is a fascinating subject. You know, as far as deep AI, the ones that, you know, would be, for instance, applicable to a scenario like the Terminator, right? That's deep AI. There's different levels of AI. You know, we're still a good distance from that, unless there's things going on behind the curtain with government of which we are unaware. We're still a ways away from that. What really concerns me, not so much the commercial sector, it is the police and military sectors. One of my concerns is when we have AI-operated autonomous weapons platforms, whether they be ground, in the ocean, or aerial, where they of their own volition, without any human being involved, they select and engage targets. I think that is...
And that is actually happening now. It's happening now. They have made an AI drone, a drone that will decide for itself. You know, you give it the target, and then it will just go on its own, and it will do its thing and destroy the target and decide for itself when and how and everything else without
hardly
any involvement. It's already a thing.
The part that concerns me is when they leave it up to the AI to decide what is a target. That's the one. I mean, the AI choosing the best mechanism
and
to go
not
after
a far
target
leap.
That it's been, yeah, it's not, right. So that's the part that concerns me. The other aspect is, obviously, there will be nations that have these, you know, unmanned AI weapons platforms. So let's use just as an example, some sort of drone or pilotless fighter jet or bomber. Okay, so the cost in human life to a country that is an economic powerhouse like the United States or China, the cost in human life will be negligible. But a nation or an opposing force that doesn't have that sort of economic might, therefore does not have that kind of technological might, the cost to them in human life will be very real. So how much more, I mean, the United States has a history of making war on just about anybody it wants to, anytime it wants to. They may not call it a war. They may call it a police action. It may be special operations, you know, that nobody's aware of. But we've been doing this for a long, long time. So how much more likely is it for countries like the United States, I'm not just singling out the United States, countries like the United States to initiate warfare at whatever level, whether it's black ops type stuff, whether it's, you know, drone warfare, whether it's plain old open kind of thing we're seeing in the Ukraine, how much easier is it to decide to go to war if no one on your side is going to die and everyone that's going to die is on your opponent's side? How much easier is it to make that decision when all you're doing, the worst thing that will happen to you is some pieces of hardware will be destroyed?
Exactly.
We take a bad situation.
You know, in the cost of human life, as long as it's the enemy, then it's fine. You know, that whole mentality is a problem right there. And then, you know, and
right,
I did
which usually the enemy isn't really the enemy.
Yeah, you know, when it comes to AI, like I read, I'm pretty sure posted on my page, They literally taught an AI how to be a psychopath. Like, they said this AI only, like, violent stuff, stuff on serial killers. I mean, like, only fed it all that information. They literally have made a psychopath AI at this point. And it's like, if you're going to do that, and then at the same time, oh, looky here, there's a drone that has AI and it can decide when, you know, when to shoot and everything, and you know, doesn't need to have a human at the controls. It's like, when you have those two things happening at about the same time, it's like, it boggles my mind. Like, maybe this isn't such a good idea.
Yeah, it's, again, you know, and imagine the thing I just described, that's warfare. But imagine when AI is on the streets of your town and it's armed and it thinks it understands what it's seeing and it acts. Yeah, don't need that.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the interesting thing. We see a lot of police abuse, right, if you follow groups that specialize in bringing up videos of police misconduct and so forth. We see a lot of really
mm-hmm.
violent, really ugly police misconduct. So if the law enforcement community of human beings doesn't start policing itself better and doesn't start being a servant of the people as it should, it's going to make these AI things, whatever we want to call them, going to make them more attractive to the public, because the public's going to say, when an AI pulls me over because my license plate is out of registration or my taillight is out, the AI isn't going to kill me, but a cop might. So maybe we should get these AIs instead.
Yeah, and then, but it's the opposite is true, you know, because if the AIs are learning, you know, how do those AIs learn what proper police conduct is, right? And so it's all in how they're taught, and people forget that. And initially, you know, they're a blank slate, and they are taught things, and they are shown things so that they're databases can get updated with different behaviors and different things and different actions. And so you're absolutely right. If we don't have our own house cleaned up when it comes to police actions and actually serving the people and all that, and then AI learns how to abuse that authority, then when you get pulled over by that AI, you might think that you have less of a chance of being killed, but it might actually be more of a chance, because depending on how that AI is taught, it could respond to a situation because it's referencing a similar situation and responding accordingly instead of being able to differentiate like a human being would. This situation is different from this other situation, and so my response needs to be different. Does that make sense?
I guess it does, although what I was referring to without actually coming out and articulating it is you're not going to have some sort of an AI law enforcement device that's pulling people over, that's armed. You're not going to hear it say, I had to shoot, I was in fear for my life. Well,
I mean, like, there's literally a transhumanist party with a transhumanist bill of rights to treat AI just like people. And so if AIs are considered to have their own consciousness, then the AI police robot, whatever, could literally end up saying that. I shot this person because I feared for my life. And that's what this movement is all about. It wants to give the same rights. Like, okay, AI consciousness is life too. And it's like, I'm not kidding you. Look it up. I wish I was making this up. But that's what they're trying to
you
train people to
was.
Do. I can kind of even see signs of it in Hollywood.
Hopefully
you
citizens
thought I was
would not
it
allow
up.
Their hopefully citizens would not allow their government to put those devices on the street without a restriction in their programming preventing them from acting on those sort of claims, those sort of assertions. Because, yes, can you imagine if an AI killed somebody's 9-year-old daughter and then said, I was in fear for my life? You know, who?
Yeah.
Not going to work. Not going to work.
Yeah, I think important too is the highway to hell, I call it, the true 5G, which is kind of the avenue for these atrocities, these war atrocities you're talking about, you know, the indiscriminate, you know, use of weapons and drones and stuff, and the AI law enforcement and stuff. When people are when they're like, yay, 5G, it's not going to, like, help their everyday walking around life. They won't really notice it, but it will benefit that type of technology. And people don't realize how close that is to us. This isn't some kind of futuristic movie. This is, like, right around the corner.
Yes. And, of course, people are asleep at the wheel. You know that. I mean, instead of getting out in front of this issue, people will be responding after something horrific happens. That just seems to be the nature of how we are in this country.
I'm just glad that the airlines held off there for a little while.
It is getting late. I'm going to have to take my leave. This has been awesome. You guys are fantastic hosts.
Thank you. You've been an awesome guest. Yeah, you definitely stayed on longer, and I didn't like want to even interrupt the conversation by doing a commercial break or anything, because we were just on a roll, and I've just been so enjoying having you on the show.
One of the things I was really looking forward to talking about, and we ran out of time because we had so many other great things to talk about, was the income tax. So maybe, you know, if you're in the mood sometime, I'll come back and talk about that.
I wanted to get to that too, because you did a great video in the income tax scam in 15 minutes, where you really kind of just broke it all down in a quick nutshell.
I definitely wanted to try to get to that subject.
Can you tell our listeners about your book before you go and how they can hear your content and everything? Do your plug?
Sure. My books, primarily Income Tax Shattering the Myths and Body Science. Body Science, by the way, teaches you how to never have to get any chronic disease. Lifestyle, chronic disease, genetics are a different issue. Never, ever get any lifestyle chronic disease ever again for the rest of your life. Live long and be healthy and happy. It's a fantastic book. It's gotten rave reviews. I don't think it's ever gotten anything less than a 5-star review. Income Tax Shattering the Myths. It tells the truth about what tax law really says, which is that the vast majority of Americans have never been made liable by the laws that Congress passed. And I know that's really difficult for people to understand or to accept, which is why I hope maybe at some point you'll have me back on and we can kick that around and we can enlighten some people so they really understand that it's not some nutty theory. It's actually what the law says, which is really cool, because I don't think anybody imagines that in America, in a land of liberty, the government has a right to take whatever percentage of your paycheck they want to take. I don't think that anybody other than maybe a hard left person could imagine in a land of liberty that's permissible. And the good news is not only is it impermissible under the Constitution, but Congress has never done it. It's just one of these many false narratives that we've been talking about tonight. And if you know the law and you look at it, then you understand where to look, and that's what Income Tax Shattering the Myths does for people, then if they choose, they can walk away from the system, which is absolutely fantastic. I filed my last tax return and paid my last income tax in 1993, and here I sit talking to you, and I have the best-selling book in the nation about that subject. So they can get either of those at drreality.news. Again, drreality.news. Sign up for the newsletter, as I mentioned, so we can stay in touch, and when I put fresh content out, you will always know.
And didn't you just do a video about how the IRS questioned you?
They called me up and asked me if I would come down and talk to them.
It didn't turn out to be like a very good time for them.
No, it was bad. This like, I don't know, 20 years ago, that story was. And, yeah, they called me up and they said, we'd like you to come down here and talk to us. And back then it was pre-9/11. And so it was 300 North Los Angeles Street. And I went down there and I met with them. And, yeah, go to Rumble, Dave Champion, PhD. And it says right there, my meeting with the IRS didn't go well for the IRS. And it's quite a hoot. Yeah, I mean, talk about a bunch of bozos. But if you know the law, you can say things like "what a bunch of bozos." But I think most Americans, I know most Americans have never read the law. They're actually fearful of even seeing it, and so they live in fear of the IRS because I don't know. I hate to use the C word, but I think a lot of my peers are not brave. The opposite of brave.
Yeah, put it that way. Yeah. I thought you were going to use a different word, but then...
No, not that word. No. But my thing is, I tell people all the time to read the book and get the facts and be able to share that information with your fellow Americans. Even if you choose not to leave the system, at least do your part. Get educated. Tell people the truth. I mean, that's what we need to do to turn this country around. But people are so afraid. It's just, it blows my mind how we got from the founding fathers to what I see today.
Yes, the IRS is like the big bad wolf that all of us Goldilockses have to be afraid of and can't fight against.
Yeah. Yeah, such nonsense.
Exactly. I love it. And, yeah, and I do have your books, too. And now is a great time to order your book, Income Tax Shattering the Myth, too, because, you know, it's going to be tax time here in less than a month for people to be filing and stuff. So maybe this is a good opportunity for them to go and order and check out your book and read it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I see people griping on social media all the time about, oh, we just had to do our taxes, or I just got screwed by the IRS. You know, and I know that they find it hard to believe, but I always tell them the same thing. I said, you know, you don't have to put up with that anymore, but it does require you to do something, and it requires you to read 400 pages. I just had a gentleman post on Facebook. He just completed Income Tax Shattering the Myth, and he put this big post up, and he says, oh, my God. He said, I had an idea of what the book was about. He said, but I didn't realize how comprehensive it is and how it covers every single question in detail and easy to understand. I mean, I just read that like 15 minutes before we all got together for this conversation. It's frustrating because when I had the idea to write the book, I had done 17 years worth of research on the topic, and I understood that, you know, I'm like one in a couple hundred thousand as far as being willing to dedicate that sort of time to researching such a non-interesting, dry subject. But I realized the significance. And I realized nobody else was going to follow me in that research. And, you know, oh, yeah, let me go do 17 years worth of research, too. So I realized what my fellow Americans needed in my naivete was a compendium that was complete, A to Z, no questions, everything settled, that they could go to and they could read it. And that once that compendium existed, people would be getting out of the system by the millions, right? They'd be like, yeah, this is what we've been waiting for. Give me that book. I want to read it. I want to get knowledgeable, and I want to get out. Like I said, naive. Most people are too afraid to even pick it up and read it. We've gone from George Washington, James Madison, Thomas Jefferson, John Adams. We've gone from those people to a bunch of scaredy cats who won't even read a book. They don't even have to act on it. They're terrified to read it. I admit, I don't get it. Totally bad.
Yeah. so terrified of the truth that might actually free them. You know, it's like, it's like, here's the key to your prison cell. Do you want to take it? Here, I'm offering it to you. You know, like, here, take your key. Yeah, and being afraid to take the key and unlock the door for themselves.
Yeah. All right, ladies, I must run. Thank you for everything.
Thank you.
This has been a fantastic interview.
Thank you.
Yes, and I would absolutely love to have you on again so we could touch on all kinds of different subjects. I mean, like, I just think that you have so much knowledge, too, because, I mean, I wanted to try to get into firearms and your experience with firearms, too, because I'm always, like, I love hearing about that. So I definitely think that we need to have a round two.
Okay. Just let me know.
And my show, too, the Alaskan Patriot Network.
Whatever you say, doll.
Thank you.
I follow you
on Twitter. I retweet you every day. No.
Oh, very kind. I'll try not to make you wait as it belongs as I had to make Lori Ann wait because of the move.
I know. I totally feel your pain. All right. Well, we don't want to keep you up forever. Thank you so much.
Yes.
All right. Thanks,
guys.
Have a great one.
Give Scar some lovin's, too. Scar is his new kitty that he just adopted. And so give Scar some lovin's from me.
I'm going to go do that right now.
Lucky kitten. All right, good night.
Bye, ladies.
All right, good night. Thank you so much again. I just love having him on. What a great guest. Oh, I loved it. We definitely got to have a part two. And, yeah, it would be awesome to have him come on your show next. And
yeah, that'd
continue.
Be like part two for you and not keeping you waiting as long. No.
No, you can tell from people. I mean, he does his videos and stuff, and you can tell that he's a pretty relatable guy, but he also is very knowledgeable and very factual about things, or tries to be very factual. And so it's just really hard not to like somebody like that. You know, I just, this was a lot of fun.
I love
a little bit of an ad break at some point, too.
Yeah. Well, I want to
go ahead.
Thank you. But what I wanted to add, too, is that, you know, although there's, you know, the facts are there, the information's there, but it's relatable, it's understandable, I think, for all of his listeners. That sometimes, you know, there's times like when the numbers are flying where I've had to go back and listen again. And I would have asked a teacher if you know, facts like that. But and I admire people who can think like that and stuff. But yet he's not just those numbers. He, like I said, he can, it's something that he can, you know, say it so that everybody can understand it in some way. And he's a very, very, very talented and smart human being, and we're all very lucky to have had him on tonight.
Oh yeah, this episode's already going to be definitely part of my best of Lucid Libertarian shows that I replay on late night on Saturday. I can't wait to play it again, actually. I just think it was just awesome. And it was really great. Like, I love having you on, doll, because, you know, a couple of times you jumped in there and you were like, you just said what I was thinking. You know, it was about to come out of my mouth. And then you said the same thing. And I'm like, God, I love her. We're so like-minded sometimes.
Yeah. You know, and there's no video. We don't script. And we're states apart. So, I mean, you know, it's just, it is.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It is. It really works out well.
I think so, too. Well, let's take a quick ad break here. Let everybody, you know, stretch their legs a little bit. Let the dog out. Let the dog in. Feed the cat. Whatever you got to do. And I know we don't have too much show left, so it'll just be a very quick break with just a couple of ads. And then Dahl and I will come back. And if you do want to call in, if you're out there listening and you want to call in during this last portion of the show, feel free to do so, 319-527-6208. And then press number 1, that raises your hand and lets me know you want to come on. So we're just going to take a quick 5-minute or less break, and then we will come back and see what else we're going to do for the rest of the show. So thank you, everybody, for listening, and we will be back shortly.
Imagine waking up in a trunk. What is grooming? What if I told you we had a 40% increase of human and sex trafficking in our country due to COVID lockdowns? We already had high numbers to begin with. One's Purpose is an amazing organization pounding the pavement every day, helping these survivors get help. Unfortunately, they do not have the funding they need for a safe house. In the state of Oregon, we have 0 safe houses for these survivors who have endured the most heinous of crimes. The time is now to get involved. The time is now to help stop human trafficking. Please go to onespurpose.com to get involved. If you need help and if you know someone who needs to get help, please contact 541-221-3448. Make a donation. Make a difference.
Join me, Dahl Arntzen, your host, Fridays, the Alaskan Patriot Network. I will bring you conservative views and news, both at home here in Alaska and around the world. So be sure to tune in Fridays, 2 to 5 p.m. Alaska Daylight Time, the Alaskan Patriot Network.
All right, everybody, we are back. You are tuned into the Lucid Libertarian with Lorianne show. I have on with me my special guest co-host, Dahl Arntzen, fellow Freedom Miser, Alaskan Patriot Network host. And Dahl, I'm still kind of deflating a little bit. Dave Champion, Dr. Reality, was just such an awesome guest to have on. So glad this finally happened. And I'm so glad that you're able to be here with
Yes. me. Yes, me too. Like I said, you know, I follow him on social media too, and I always like to make sure I like and retweet his stuff, as with yours and everybody else that I like out there that's listening. Yeah, no, it was a great interview. Like I said, a ton of information, and yeah, we're all the better for it.
Absolutely. And, you know, I could probably sneak in a clip before the end of the show here. We got a half hour. But then I don't have anybody after me, so the recording I can continue for a while if I want. But I'm not sure if you saw this today, and I rolled my eyeballs. Yuri Gagarin, the first person in space, has had his name removed from a Space Foundation fundraiser following Russia's invasion of the Ukraine. So Yuri was actually the first Soviet cosmonaut that was the person to fly in space on April 12, 1961. And so this nonprofit organization decided to change the name of the fundraiser amid current world events. So he has his name removed. They're canceling the first person to ever go into space because of Russia invading the Ukraine. And I'm like, oh my God, like, stop this insanity. You can't just erase history like that, you know? Yeah, they just want to, like, totally erase, like, nope, you don't exist. We're going to change things.
Yeah.
Unreal. Well,
don't we still have a astronaut up in the space station?
I believe so, yeah.
I believe they were supposed to take Sputnik to go get everybody, and then the Russians put out like a social media thing or a news clip thing, and it was like the capsule leaving the space station waving at the American leaving him behind. But it was I'm guessing it was probably a parody or something, but it was put out on Russian propaganda information. But Yeah, I do believe we still have somebody up there. And in this case, you know, I'm sure that somebody like Bezos or Elon Musk will come to the rescue if that's the case and go get our
astronaut. And you know, the thing is he's already been up there for like I think he's kind of like been up there like the longest of anybody in space or something, because he was supposed to I think if I remember right reading this. Forget the name of our astronaut that's up there. Please forgive me. But he was supposed to come back like a close to a year ago or 9 months ago or something, and he decided to stay longer. And so he's been up there for, I think, something like 18 months, which is like a really long time to be up in space. And I think that he's due to come back, and there was really a real threat. I mean, can you imagine? As evil as Putin is being portrayed to be, I really don't believe that anybody would allow one of our astronauts, any astronaut from anywhere, to be like abandoned up there or anything. I think that that's kind of ridiculous. And so, it's insane. And then didn't I see a picture? I don't know even if it's real or not, but it's coming from the mainstream media, where there's a crew of Russian astronauts that just landed up there at the International Space Station, and they're all decked out in Ukraine colors.
Yeah, I saw that
too. Is that real
or
is that fake?
Well, no. Well, the article I'd read that I saw accompanying with the picture said that it was just a coincidence, and that is the material they had available. Honest to God.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That was all that was available. Yeah. That was probably all that was provided to them in their bins. You know, here you go. Here's your uniforms. Here's what you got.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Not to make a political statement. Not at all.
Oh my goodness, it's
appalling. But yeah, I saw that story, and I had to bring that up. I'm just like, okay, so now they're canceling the first guy that ever went to space because he was Russian. So it's now time to erase that part of history. All right, got it. So
yeah,
I mean, and I'm not making this up, folks. You know, just use your search engine and look it up. You'll know I'm not making it up.
yeah. Well, you know, it's so hard to differentiate what's fact or fiction anymore. And it regardless of the news source, and I have become such a skeptic, you know, with thing when I read anything, my mind starts, you know, twisting. What kind of scenario? What do they want me to believe? What is the narrative here? Am I reading just what happened or somebody's perception of what happened, and what's their perception of a perception? And, you know, it's just like this onion layer. And same thing with, you know, like the Ukrainian thing and the Russian thing. And you and I have discussed, we discussed thoroughly, you know, World War II and history repeating itself prior to this even heating up. I mean, it was starting to be, you know, discussed more, but before engagement, we were discussing this and the history of Ukraine, and that you know, that this is a civil war in this area, and that there was already problems there. And
exactly. And there's a,
what is
there's
the agenda?
Still a controlling faction of like neo-Nazis, which
exactly.
Are
what's
uncannily similar with Antifa here. Same symbolism, same method, same dress, same everything.
Exactly.
And,
I look at, okay, so exactly, you nailed it when you said Antifa. I look at this current, this shit show of coup, the, you know, his fraudulency in this administration, and that grouping that got him there, Antifa. Look at who enabled, you know, the riots, BLM and Antifa and stuff. So there is a narrative here where, you know, the same tactics have been used by this party that stole this election and is, you know, occupying the White House. We're seeing this happen. I don't know. I'm not certain about this. I just don't feel good about this, Lorianne. I don't feel like we're helping.
I think
the good guys. I'm not saying the Ukrainians are good people. Ukrainians are good people. There are good people, just like there's good people and bad people there. But we've got some bad guys here, and they've got some bad guys there. And the bad guys are helping the bad guys right now. That's how I'm going to break it down.
Yep.
Break it down like mom breaks it down, you know, like, and then bad guys.
Exactly.
What
the governments are doing
is
different than what the people want.
Exactly. And, you know, this is all unfortunate. This whole scenario is unfortunate. But this is the Russians, there's families. They have families there in Ukraine. This is a huge country that got broke up, just like North Korea, South Korea, like West and East Germany back in the day. It got broke up. They divided this line, and Zelensky's like, Russian, you must speak Ukrainian. You must not, you know, practice. So these families were not only ripped apart, but they were to all of a sudden, don't act like a Russian anymore. Now you're Ukrainian because we drew a line here. And that didn't work well with the people.
Yeah.
And how would that feel?
No.
How would that feel?
And you know, not everybody always forgets either. Everybody's just expected to forget what their history is.
That's why I don't think we're seeing a lot of discourse from the people against the people. I don't see Ukrainians going, fuck you, Russia. No, they're saying, help us. They're not saying who the bad guy is. I'm not seeing a lot of them. I'm hearing missiles are raining down on us. But who are the missiles really coming from? Target. Are they quiet people?
Exactly.
Are these assassinations with collateral damage? I mean, I'm going off the rails right now. And I'm just laying it out there. You know, I don't know that everything that we're seeing is the actual narrative and hearing. You know, it's fishy stuff. It's like 3 day old.
I mean, so
stuff
much of it, it just seems like a Hollywood movie. Like it's all being produced like a Hollywood movie. It's just, you know, it just doesn't seem like we're being told the truth, anything close to the truth. Maybe little smidgens of it, but it's really hard to tell what the truth is from what the fabrications are.
Yeah, and you look at it, Lorianne, we've got a Russian comedian who won a questionable election, and then we have an American clown who stole an election. Totally turning the entire world and economies upside down. There's only two of them. There's billions of us. People need to wake up and quit letting two people and their cronies, and we know in reality, it's not just two people calling the shots here, but, you know, and they're not even calling the shots.
I mean, if there is no accident that it's Biden right now in the White House. I mean, this has been brewing, and this has been in the works for, you know, since he was vice president, even before then. You know, people aren't understanding this. Like, what we're seeing happening right now has been planned for a long time, you know, and we're just seeing, and now it's being seen to fruition. And Biden is at the heart of it.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, I think that Hunter Biden's done so many horrible, deplorable things. And Joe Biden's done his fair share. But Hunter Biden's had his hands in things that are so bad, folks, that I believe that Biden was blackmailed into accepting this position so that his son could get off on these horrible crimes.
Exactly. And it's also no accident that Hunter Biden's travel records cannot be found by the DHS or the Secret Service for 3 years that he was traveling to and from the Ukraine. Like, it's just pure coincidence that that cannot be found. That's disappeared.
Yeah. Yeah. So
no correlation at all, yeah. Right?
Yeah, so, you know, that's just some thoughts to sleep on tonight. Happy Sunday night, everybody.
So as a little bit of a thing, I wanted to actually play this What's-Her-Face video, a little bit of comic relief and kind of segueing away from, you know, a lot of the COVID and Ukraine and all that.
Nuclear footballs, yeah.
Has started to try to cover news that is not that is being hidden by all these other things. And it's about like a 9-minute long clip. And she is just funny. So this is one that she just on March 7th. And it's What's Her Face. That's what she calls herself. You can follow her on YouTube or by What's Her Face Entertainment. This one is bees ejaculating to death and other news. here's the comic relief and stuff and other news by What's Her Face.
Hello, my friends, and welcome to another episode of News You Missed. This week, I thought we would take a little break from the conflict in Ukraine to talk about some lesser-known but equally important news. Our top story today, it turns out that last summer's heat wave made Canadian male bees ejaculate to death. It's interesting because last summer's lockdown did the same thing to male humans. Turns out that excessive heat can make drones spontaneously and fatally ejaculate. And that's just what the heat wave brought to Western Canada last year. Now here comes the plug for global warming. This is how they're going to sell men on it. You wouldn't want to ejaculate to death like the bees, would you? Get yourself a Prius if you don't want to be us. Teen has legs and fingers amputated after eating leftover rice. Now, I don't know if these two events are related, but if they're not, this is a very sadistic headline. Contaminated leftovers led to extreme and tragic results last year in Massachusetts. Doctors had to amputate both legs and all 10 fingers of a 19-year-old college student, according to the New England Journal of Medicine. The teen had eaten leftover rice, chicken, and lo mein noodles. I don't know why you would just say leftover rice when he ate some old Chinese food restaurant chicken, which we all know is mystery meat. After he finished his meal, he was fine initially, but 20 hours later, things took a turn for the worse. The student started experiencing abdominal pain and nausea. He started throwing up, with everything he spewed out being colored a strange red. That's the MSG penetrating your intestines. Upon arrival at the second hospital, the doctors managed to get more information from the student's family. The friend who'd eaten the same food as him puked once, but did not develop the same serious symptoms. They also found out that the student was relatively healthy. He did smoke cigarettes and weed and enjoyed a drink every now and then, but nothing in his habits could explain his bizarre symptoms. Oh yes, relatively healthy. He smoked cigarettes, did drugs, drank alcohol, and ate five-day-old Chinese food. That is the picture of health in 2020 America. The student ended up staying at a hospital for several weeks. Unfortunately, his hands and feet started getting necrotic. To prevent the necrosis from spreading, the doctors had no option to remove his legs below the knee. They were also forced to amputate each and every one of his fingers. His heart and other organs also began to fail. In response, the doctors gave him a pacemaker, which he had on him for 13 days. That is terrible. That is fucking awful. I actually got really, really bad food poisoning from eating leftover rice, and I spent the entire night shitting and puking my guts out. I prayed to Jesus. I brought my pillow from my bed and put it next to the toilet. I wrote a note to my mother saying my final goodbyes. Baltimore student graduates without learning to read. I know I'm not the only one. You know, I'm not really that surprised. Kids out there are graduating without knowing that boys have a penis and girls have a vagina. Metaverse app allows kids into virtual strip clubs. I mean, what difference does it make? Have you seen the show Euphoria? It looks to me like kids are running the strip clubs in real life. U.S. House candidate sorry for intoxication during sleepover. This one ought to be good. A U.S. House candidate in Oklahoma has apologized after reports that she became intoxicated at a Valentine's Day weekend sleepover for middle school age girls, berated several of the children, and vomited in a hamper. I have so many fucking questions about that sentence. Democrat Abby Broyles, 32, told television station KFOR that she had an adverse reaction after drinking wine and taking sleep medication given to her by a friend. Was the friend 13? Instead of helping me sleep, I hallucinated. Yeah, that's called being drunk, and that's not a hallucination. It usually just means that you lose your inhibitions. And if you are the type of 32-year-old woman that often berates middle school children, you'll just be more of that person when you're drunk. Not a hallucination, though. She said she was invited to the slumber party by a good friend from law school who is the mother of one of the girls. Parents and at least one of the girls who were at the sleepover told the online news outlet Non-Doc, which first reported the story, that Broyles used profanity and berated several of the 12 and 13-year-old girls at the party, commenting on one girl's acne and another's Hispanic ethnicity. What are you looking at, you dirty little Mexican? Why are you always parking your car on the lawn? I want to say sorry from the bottom of my heart. I apologize for any hurt or damage or trauma that my behavior when I didn't know what I was doing caused. I like how she keeps saying she didn't know what she was doing. I mean, I am no stranger to being blackout drunk, but you still got to apologize for your behavior as if you were fully aware. I apologize for getting on top of the table and calling your mother a whore in the middle of her birthday dinner. I'm sorry. In a statement provided to the Associated Press on Tuesday, Boyle said she doesn't believe she would have said the things she's accused of saying. Oh, now she's accused of saying them. Now she doesn't. I mean, did nobody film this in the age of the iPhones? Maybe the younger generation's getting a little better and they're going back to the basics. Nobody filmed this woman screaming racial slurs at a 12-year-old Mexican child, of saying that she has no plans to drop out of the race. The things I'm accused to have said are not who I am. Yeah, they are, just real deep down. That's the thing about being blackout drunk. Anything you do, a little bit in there, isn't it? Speaking of feminism, from Valencia to Bilbao, this will be the new feminist houses with a larger kitchen and no master bedroom. Oh, the glory. The main feminist theories on habitability maintain that the current distribution of housing is the result of heteropatriarchy and the role of caretakers that has traditionally been assigned to women. Oh yeah, it's definitely the result of the heteropatriarchy. That's why we now live in a time where the woman owns the whole house and the man retreats into the unfinished basement like a stray rabid animal. I mean, just look at this room right here. Do you think my boyfriend had any input into decorating this room? Do you think he was out there picking the perfect throw pillows and picking the perfect 9-inch deep console table for our front door? Do you think he thought to himself, I just want to create a beautiful mid-century modern / boho vibe? I don't fucking think so. And the role of caretakers that has traditionally been assigned to women. For this reason, constructions with a gender perspective. Caretakers that has traditionally been assigned to women. I don't think the role of caretaker was assigned to women by anyone. You know who I think assigned us to the role of caretaker? Our warm and comforting energy. That's what probably assigned us. What is so bad about being a fucking caretaker? Like, what do these bitches want? Is there something so bad about taking care of shit? Just everybody's like, I don't care. I don't even want to care. I'm not a caretaker. I'm a do not care. taker. For this reason, constructions with a gender perspective have begun to proliferate in recent years. In order to incorporate the gender perspective in housing policies, it is more important than ever to guarantee the visibility of all the areas where domestic tasks are carried out and to guarantee the participation of all people in these tasks. This sounds even more like the heteropatriarchy having its way. I mean, you got your slave woman in the kitchen and you got to keep an eye on her all times, at least before she could go hide in the kitchen and, you know, suck back some of grandpa's old cough medicine. Now you got to keep an eye on her everywhere she goes. You got to watch her do the laundry. You got to watch her wash the dishes. You can criticize her from the other room. Another of the ideas that this regulation intends to introduce is the dehierarchization of spaces, so that there can no longer be a larger master bedroom with an ensuite bathroom. You know who doesn't complain at all about the size of your bedroom versus theirs? Cats, which is what you're going to end up spending the rest of your life with. All right, guys, that's it for me today. I'm now going to retreat to the kitchen before my master gets home. You know, I thought maybe I would get him a drink when he gets in the door, just in case he's been stressed. I don't want him to reintroduce hitting. If you guys like this video, please don't forget to like, comment, subscribe, and share, and I will see you all next week. Bye! If you guys don't get on board and get yourselves a Prius, all the men are going to come to death.
That's a good one.
I can't tell you how many times I was laughing during that. Don't make excuses.
Oh,
like how she was talking about how that lady wasn't, you know, I didn't know what I was doing. I was just like blackout drunk and I took some pills too. Like, at least be real. Apologize. No excuses.
I know, yeah. Get up on the table and call my mom a whore.
In the middle of her birthday dinner. I mean, if you do, that doesn't matter how drunk you are. You just apologize. You don't make excuses. You just... Own up to it, man. Yeah, so that's what their face. I really wish I knew what her real name was. But, yeah, she's on YouTube. WHF Entertainment. She has two different channels, and then her original What's Her Face. So I look at both to see, you know, where she puts her latest one. But like I said, she's been kind of focusing on stories like this, and she just cracks me up with some of her. And you got to watch the videos too, of course, because you're missing the visuals. But even just the way she talks about it and stuff, it's just funny, her sarcasm. So she's like the female version of J.P. Sears, I think. And I mean, she's not quite up at that level yet, but, you know, she's like an up-and-coming female J.P. Sears.
Yeah, it sounds great.
Oh, my goodness. So we got 5 minutes left to show. So before the live broadcast ends, Dahl, what is planned for Alaskan Patriot Network on Friday?
All right. Well, everybody tune in to the Alaska Patriot Network Friday, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific, 2 to 5 p.m. Alaska time. Lorianne will be joining me. And we have guest Greg Brelsford, and he is running for, he's a candidate for Alaskan, running for House, no wait, yeah, House. I might be wrong. Could be Senate. I am traveling. Full disclosure, I don't have my notebook with me. but I do believe it is U.S. Senate in Alaska. Anyway, so he is joining us, and we also will be doing some updates, regional updates, some Alaskan updates. We've got school board stuff going there, election stuff, with Governor, we just recently lost Congressman Don Young, which is a huge loss to all Alaskans and Congress. He was He had his good and his bad points, you know. As you know, sometimes conservatives, sometimes rhino. I don't know. Maybe they just burn out after being there forever. Maybe it's dinosaur syndrome. However, that puts us in a strange predicament for election, the upcoming elections, because his name was on the ballot. And by law, the governor has to have a special election within 3 months of Don Young's death. So I don't know if that part of the ballot is going to get expedited. I don't know how, or expedited. I don't know how that will work. So that's real interesting. So we'll be discussing that on Friday too, as well as probably Ukraine, Russia, and all the other crap. So. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Whatever else
definitely.
Is
yeah
transpires between now and Friday.
Exactly.
Yeah, we got
exactly. So thank
we
you.
We don't know what the content will be. The content has to transpire for us to
exactly.
know.
Yeah. So, Lorianne, thank you so much for having me join you tonight. I know tonight was a special show for both of us, actually, but. Dave Champion is a guest that you have been wanting to get, you know, on the show for a while. So I'm really glad to have been included on that tonight.
Oh, yeah. It wouldn't have been the same without you, because I know that you've been a big fan too. And so, and you brought a lot to the conversation. Although, you know, I just wanted to let him talk and just, he was
Me
really
too.
Easy to just sort of, you know, comment and ask a question and then go. And I just got the 90-second mark for the live show. And I'll probably stick around a little bit late, and that's just for the recording, but the live show is going to end here. So stay tuned next week for the Lucid Libertarian with Lorianne show as well. I have Nick Hess on as my guest. He is one of the GOP candidates for Oregon governor that I got a chance to see if several weeks back, and so he'll be a great guest. And then also I might tune on a late night tonight, 9:30. I during the late night segment, I've been playing the Fall of the Cabal part, and the other night I got through, it was Friday night, I think I got through part 5, I think. I'll have to review. So what I might do is wrap up here and then see where I left off and then kick off like a 2.5-hour show, maybe 9:30 to midnight, and continue playing some of that Falca ball. And so I might just do that at the last minute like I did on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I got the 10-second mark. So we're going to be, I'm going to stick around for a little bit longer. I'll play a song or whatever, but that'll only be for the show is ending.
Yes. All right. Well, I'm going to sign off here. I want to say God bless you all. And thank you, Lorianne. And thank you so much, everybody. And good night.
Yes.
From
good night. Thanks so much
doll.
For being on with
Not
me, doll.
For the show.
Yes.
You're welcome, my dear. All right. We'll talk later. All right. See you Friday.
Yep.
We'll hear you Friday on
yep.
my show.
I will be there. And
All right.
Try to have a good week yourself. And safe travels.
I'll keep in touch.
All right. And so since we are in overtime, I usually like to crank out a couple songs. And like I said, I am thinking of continuing the Fall of the Cabal. Fall of the Cabal is a series that was done. It's on BitChute. And there's like 10 parts to the first series, Fall of the Cabal. And then there's the sequel to the Fall of the Cabal, which there's been like, I think, 22. And I actually have all of them uploaded as clips. And so during the late night, for those that are up, and I might kick that off at 9:30 here Pacific time, and kick off and just start continuing with that series and take from it what you will. Like I said, if even 80% or 90% of everything that they say is true, which they've done a lot of research on this stuff, then that's pretty scary. So, you know, if 10 or 20% isn't true or proven wrong, whatever, take with it what you will, and you can research it for yourself too, but it really gets into a lot of stuff, including Bill Gates, several episodes on him, and so I've just been kind of going in order, and like I said, I think I got through number five. Or number five is the one that I need to start. So I need to double check that. So while I play a song, I'm going to be checking out where I left off and setting up the show, hopefully to start at 9:30 and do like a 2.5 hour long show that plays those clips as far as I can get through.
Hello, everybody. Anybody out there listening? That was the conclusion of the show recording from Dave Champion's first time being on the show. Thank you for tuning in to the rebroadcast of it. Make sure, for anybody out there listening, tune in this Sunday night as Dave Champion returns as my special guest. And we will try to hit up some of the topics that we didn't get to this first time, in addition to some other topics that I'm hoping to get to, like jury nullification. He did an excellent video just recently on jury nullification, so I definitely want to hit him up on that topic on Sunday. So Sunday night, tune in right here, Blog Talk Radio, 6 to 9 p.m. Pacific time, for special guest Dave Champion, and it should be a great time. I'm glad we are finally getting a round two with him a year later, almost a year and a month later or so. So very excited. Definitely don't miss it. And I hope you all have a wonderful start to your weekend. Good night, everybody.